Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Hope your Tuesday is going well. The Feast of the Fourth Female Doctor of the Church, St. Hildegard, along with the Feast of St. Robert Bellarmine as well. And do hope again that you are doing well yourself. It is a gorgeous day today. It is a day the Lord has made, so let us be glad and rejoice in it. Much to discuss. We'll have a complete newscast for you, of course. And we'll also have the weather. Do want to let you know what's coming up in the program. Very excited to talk with Anthony DiStefano about his latest book from Sophia Institute Press. The cover is so beautiful, and this is a very unique way of talking about both the afterlife, of course, and our goal to be with the Lord in heaven, but also tying it in with Christmas. The book is Christmas in Heaven. It's available now, and it looks like a great book to get for the little people in your life, and we'll be talking about this in depth with Anthony DiStefano. And why not, you know, order it now and get something off your shopping list for Christmas. So that's coming up at about 15 minutes past the hour. And then we are going to take a look at how the movie Reagan is doing. I'm looking forward to this conversation. I haven't had a chance to see the movie yet, but it is on my bucket list. The director of Reagan, Sean McNamara, will be with us, and we'll be taking a look at the faith of this movie and some insights into the film, as well as, again, as we mentioned, how it's doing out there in movie land, and how the attendance is, and if it's really doing well at the box office. It's always important to encourage Hollywood producers to do more of these types of movies, and the movie houses actually, to make sure they're making the movies available in distribution. So we shall discuss on a Tuesday morning, September 17th. Let's take a quick look at the weather for you right now. According to the National Weather Service, we have heavy rainfall and some flooding potential in Virginia. And then there are strong to severe storms in the high plains. There's a slight risk for excessive rainfall Tuesday across central and southeastern Virginia. And that is also moving northward. We have flash and urban flooding also possible. And then we have strong to severe thunderstorms expected across the high plains and portions of the central plains. And that's coming up today as well, with the primary threats, they're saying, actually will be severe wind gusts and large hail. So that just gives you an idea of what's going on across the country weather-wise. Again, our guests are this morning, Anthony DiStefano, and we're going to be talking to the director of the film Reagan, and his name is Sean McNamara. 3 minutes past the hour. I want to say thanks for all of you listening across the country and asking, of course, for you to continue to pray for us at EW10. And we also have our radio conference that's coming up in a few weeks. I won't be able to be there, but many of our local affiliates will be there. And if you're working at an affiliate and haven't signed up yet for the radio conference, if you've never been to one, I just want to put the word out, because it's a great event, and we'll be talking more about it as we get closer. Again, it is a Tuesday morning. We so appreciate your listenership here at EWTN. Oh, I wanted to mention, oh, I forgot to mention this. I mentioned it in the first hour. My friend Chuck Gatica, who is a former major Detroit media personality and a revert to the faith, if you didn't see it last night, was on the journey home, so please check it out. Matt Swaim and I were talking about it yesterday, because it's been quite the powerful journey for my friend Chuck, who was born into the Catholic faith, but eventually just drifted away and became a very strong evangelical leader, even an associate pastor, but made his way back home to Rome. And his wife also recently entered the church. So it's a great story, and you can find it, of course, on our YouTube page through EWTN, EWTN.com. All right, almost 5 minutes past the hour now on a Tuesday morning. Let's get started and see what's happening in and around the world with the news. Well, officials are confirming they are indeed investigating the attempted shooting of Donald Trump as an assassination attempt. FBI Miami Special Agent Jeffrey Veltri made the announcement yesterday.
We view this as extremely serious and are determined to provide answers as to what led up to the events which took place.
Meanwhile, Mackenzie LaPointe from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Florida also confirmed the two federal firearm charges for the suspect, Ryan Routh, and what he faces at this point.
Routh was charged federally with possession of a firearm by a convicted felon and possession and receipt of a firearm with an obliterated serial number.
LaPointe saying the Secret Service found a Soviet-era rifle, backpack, and video camera where the suspect was staked out in the area along the line of the Trump golf course yesterday. Meanwhile, at the same press conference, it was also revealed that former President Donald Trump's alleged would-be assassin was previously on the FBI's radar. The special agent in charge of the Miami office adding the suspect was the subject of a previously closed 2019 tip to the agency in which it was alleged that he was in possession of a firearm as a felon. Christian Marks tells us new security measures are being announced for former President Trump's rally in New York State on Wednesday night in light of a recent assassination attempt.
Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman says the County Police Intelligence Center will be fully staffed and all units will be deployed to ensure Trump and attendees are safe.
We will have aviation up in the air. Our mounted units will be on site. Community Affairs, our pop cops, the Detective Division, our canine unit.
They'll be working with other agencies like Homeland Security. Police Commissioner Patrick Ryder says sweeps of the venue will be done the night before and morning of the rally, and there will be only one entrance through the main gate on the turnpike.
This will be the safest place in the country.
In other news this morning, Cardinal Victor Fernandez, a prefect for the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, will lead a press conference on the spiritual experience of Medjugorje. That is set to happen, according to Catholic News Agency, this Thursday, September 19th, and it will take place at the Vatican. The Vatican Press Office informing that at Thursday's press conference on Medjugorje, which will take place at 11:30 a.m. Rome time, Fernandez will be joined by Monsignor Armando Mateo, who serves as secretary to the Dicastery's doctrinal section, along with Andrea Torinelli, editorial director for the Office of Communications. Daniel Martindale tells us a Christian pastor from Garden Grove, California, is back home after spending nearly two decades in a Chinese prison.
On Monday, the U.S. State Department confirmed the release of David Lin, though it's unclear what prompted his release. The State Department says U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken had been raising the issue on a regular basis and met with Chinese officials in July. Lin, who is now 68 years old, was detained in China in 2006. He was later convicted of contract fraud and sentenced to life in prison.
And a new study has found that daily porn consumption among young adults is leading to statistically significant negative mental health outcomes, including higher rates of reported depression. Also from the Catholic News Agency this morning, the Institute for Family Studies and YouGov survey, CNA reports of 2,000 adults under the age of 40 determined that pornography has become a daily part of life for many young people. About 10% of young adults age 18 to 39 report watching porn online at least once a day. And men, they say, are about twice as likely as women to report being daily users of online pornography. The study also found liberal young adults are roughly twice as likely as conservatives to report watching online porn at least once daily. Daily porn use, according to that report, similar for married and unmarried respondents and was roughly consistent across income and education levels, according to the research. And frequent use of online pornography is linked, they say, to an increased occurrence of negative mental health outcomes among young adults, with roughly one-third of daily porn users reporting feeling down, depressed, or hopeless, most or all of the time, compared with just 19% of those who rarely or never watch porn. A San Diego County supervisor is preparing to testify before a congressional committee about the region's border problems. A board member, Jim Desmond, will be in front of the House Committee on Homeland Security tomorrow. He says it's vital everyone knows what's really happening and how the Biden-Harris administration created the crisis, in his opinion.
We want people here, but we want to keep the bad people out, and we have not accomplished that, and I think we've made the problem here worse. People just bypass Border Patrol agents and come into our countries. We have no idea who they are.
Desmond says he will give an up-close and personal experience testifying of what he has seen, such as mass street releases of migrants in Southern California. He says it is presenting a major public safety concern. A couple from Southern California has been found guilty of operating a birth tourism business. A pair from L.A. accused of charging pregnant Chinese women tens of thousands of dollars to enter the country without stating their purpose in order to give birth on American soil to a child who would instantly gain U.S. citizenship. Michael Kastner tells us the chief of the U.S. Postal Service says he's fully committed to ensuring the timely delivery of ballots in this year's election.
U.S. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy responded Monday to concerns raised last week by about three dozen election officials from the National Association of State Election Directors. The group questioned the USPS's ability to deliver millions of ballots, citing concerns about processing facility operations and frontline training deficiencies. DeJoy said he plans to hold a call with the state officials to speak to their concerns. USPS said it's currently delivering mail in just over 2.5 days, but is urging voters to mail their ballots at least 1 week before their state's deadline.
Ohio Governor Mike DeWine is sending the state patrol to keep an eye on schools in Springfield, Ohio, after more than 30 bomb threats since last week. Two colleges moved to virtual learning and two elementary schools were evacuated yesterday. The threats so far have all been baseless, but troopers will be dispatched to all 17 buildings in the local school district. Sally Patterson reports the Coast Guard is holding public hearings on last year's implosion of the OceanGate Titan submersible on its way to visit the wreck of the Titanic.
Coast Guard officials on Monday presented an animation of the Titan's journey before it lost communication with the outside world. Over the next 2 weeks, they'll investigate what caused the experimental submersible to implode last year. Officials plan to call several witnesses to help them, quote, uncover the facts surrounding the incident and develop recommendations to prevent similar tragedies in the future. The Titan departed from Canada's coast on June 18, 2023, carrying five passengers. All were killed, including a 19-year-old.
Small earthquakes and aftershocks could continue to rattle Southern California for some time. That's according to one expert. This following Monday's quake in Malibu, including a 3.6 and a 4.7 magnitude quake.
We need to remember that the quiet of the last 25 years is not representative of the long-term Southern California pattern, and we should get used to having more than we've seen recently.
That's Dr. Lucy Jones. She's a seismologist and noted that while multiple earthquakes of magnitude 3.4 or greater in a short span is normal, Southern California's recent decrease in quake frequency is unusual. And Boeing is announcing sweeping cuts to conserve cash as it's dealing with factory workers' strike. The company is saying yesterday that includes a hiring freeze, a pause on non-essential travel, and a reduction on supplier spending. In a note to staff, the CFO, Brian West, said Boeing will stop most purchase orders for its 737 MAX, 767, and 777 jetliners. Brad Ford says it's back to the office for Amazon workers, and that will start next year.
Amazon has been increasing the number of days employees were required to be in the office. Since May, they needed to be in the office at least 3 days a week. Starting January 2nd, they'll need to be in the office the entire week. CEO Andy Jassy says there will be exceptions, just like there were before the pandemic. That includes taking care of a sick child, some sort of house emergency, or employees on the road to see customers.
A new study from Texas A&M finding that puzzles are good for your brain. It suggests older folks who play word games have better memory, attention spans, and process thoughts much better than those who do not, apparently.
The more they engage in these type of activities, the better they improve cognitive function.
That's Dr. Paul Kim, who says that can beat back against Alzheimer's disease. Nearly 6 million people in the U.S. suffer from dementia. That number is projected to grow to about 14 million by the year 2060. And finally, on a Tuesday morning, Rory O'Neill tells us a cooling job market means it could take longer for that paycheck of yours to catch up with all the recent inflation.
Since the start of the inflation surge, Bankrate says prices are up about 20%. In the last year or so, rapid wage growth has been closing that gap, but that's about to change. Bankrate now says a sharper-than-expected cool-down in the job market will slow wage gains, and most Americans may have to wait until the second quarter of next year to have the same spending power as January of 2021.
It's September 17th. It is about 14 minutes past the hour. Hope you're having a great day so far. When we come back, a brand-new book from our friend Anthony DiStefano, Christmas in Heaven, from our friends at Sophia Press. We'll be right back.
Every year, couples who go on the Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. When we said cabins are filling fast, we meant it. The 2025 cruise is sold out.
But it's the Good News Cruise, not the Bad News Cruise. So the 2026 Good News Cruise is planned and taking orders. There'll be new special and surprise guests and familiar ones from Ave Maria Radio, as well as Father Michael Schmitz and Father Joe Krupp. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the travel tab to find out more.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
He was a Jesuit, a cardinal, and a doctor of the church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Robert Bellarmine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, including helping to draft two important catechisms that defended church teachings during the Protestant Revolt. Pope Clement VIII named Bellarmine a cardinal because, as the Pope put it, Bellarmine had not his equal for learning.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Just chatting with author Anthony DiStefano during the break, and we both say, yeah, we know it's a little early for Christmas, but here's the good news. This gives you a chance to get a jump on your Christmas shopping list, especially if you have adorable young people, little people in your life, and you want to give them something great to read and to learn more about the saints and the faith. This is his latest book, and excited to have Anthony on. All of his books are so great for young people, and they're so beautifully illustrated. This one, Christmas in Heaven, and again from Sophia Institute Press. So I know we were both saying it's so early, we're not even starting to think about Christmas, but publishers need to get a jump on this. Being a fellow author, I understand it, but I think it's a great idea to be able to get this book now so you can have plenty of them to give out to the little ones in your life. So let's talk about the book, because it combines a lot of different things are going on here, Anthony. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me again. Yes, it does. You know, I'm always interested in writing books about the true meaning of Christmas. Christmas has obviously been so secularized, and you know that right. I've written several books about the nativity scene from the perspective mm-hmm. of a little star and a grumpy old ox and Joseph's donkey. But this time I wanted to try something different. This is about a little boy who's sad because his grandmother has died, and it's Christmas time, and he's wondering how she's celebrating Christmas in heaven. And so his grandfather, who is the husband of the woman who's died, sits the boy on his knee and tries to paint a very consoling picture of him, of heaven, and the big celebration, the birthday celebration that's going on there, because Christmas is Jesus' birthday. And naturally, who's at this celebration but all the angels and saints, and of course Our Lady and Jesus, and yes, his grandmother too. So it's a happy book, I think, and a fun book, and an introduction to the saints as well, but also hopefully a poignant book as well, because it does deal with the subject of grieving and death.
So why did you decide to combine both that subject, grieving, death, and then tied in with Christmas? Was that a challenge?
You know, actually, it wasn't a challenge. It all came about very organically. You know, when we think about Christmas, we think about Jesus. When we think about Jesus, we think about heaven. When we think about heaven, we think about the angels and saints, and we think about death, too. It's all part of one spiritual package. It's all part of life and telling the whole story about life. I never shy away from talking about death, because that's something that all of us, including children, have to deal with. We all have to deal with the death of loved ones at some point. Children grieve over the death of pets, as you know, the death of grandparents, and they right. experience many other kinds of permanent losses as well. So it's important that we don't sweep these sad feelings under the rug, where they can grow and fester and transform into complexes and depressions and phobias of all kinds. And fortunately, as Christians, we believe that death does not have the final word. The final word is resurrection and life everlasting in heaven. And that's a tremendous, tremendously consoling belief that can help us deal with grief in a productive and healing way.
Is this a new illustrator that you're working with in this book?
It is indeed. The name of this illustrator is Bernadette Carstensen, and she is just a fantastic, she's a very known, well-known Catholic artist. She's done many church altarpieces and religious paintings, and I've been wanting her to illustrate a book of mine for many years. Luckily, she was available for this project. Mm-hmm. I really wanted an artist who knew their faith for this book, who knew something about the saints, who could portray the saints in heaven doing things that they're famous for doing in life. And I wanted someone who could create a happy book, a bright, colorful book, with illustrations almost like, you know, those, you know, beautiful Norman Rockwell paintings or those old-fashioned Hallmark cards.
Right.
And finally, I wanted someone who was a little bit whimsical, someone who could who loves our Catholic faith, but who wasn't afraid to be a little playful and show a sense of humor, because we want to make, you know, that we're talking about something poignant here, but at the same time, we want to make it Christmassy and beautiful and fun. We want to show children that heaven is a happy place, so the illustrations have to be happy, and I think Bernadette did a great job.
The cover is really great. I don't want to. I want you to describe it. I don't want to give it away. I want you to share it because. But it's so. It does have that kind of like iconic Christmas feel to it, as you mentioned with the poinsettias in the corner and the border. But tell us who's on the cover and why you chose these particular saints.
Well, we have a Christmas tree, and we have Saint Nicholas there decorating the tree, as well as Saint Lucy and Saint Therese mm-hmm. in the bottom, and we have, of course, a beautiful manger scene, and we have a couple of angels there. I wanted to have at least a couple of recognizable saints on the cover, but and to have some angels too to give people an idea of who they might be meeting in this book. I mean, the whole book really is an attempt to give a general introduction to children to the saints. So I wanted to have inside the book the most famous saints. So I include St. Michael the Archangel and St. Peter and St. Joseph and St. Francis and St. Therese and St. Joan of Arc and naturally Our Lady. But I also include in the book, you know, lesser known saints like St. Honoré, who's the patron saint of baking. Because, as you know, you need a birthday cake for a birthday party in heaven.
And you need Christmas cookies.
And you need Christmas cookies. So you have St. Valentine handing out chocolate hearts on a tray. And you have Cecilia and St. Gregory, who are the patron saints of music. And they're joined mm-hmm. by two angels to sing a quartet. And, of course, you have comic relief in the book is St. Martha, who is continually cleaning and doing chores. So I wanted it to be a playful type of book, and that's the way, as a matter of fact, that we make it that we take the edge off of the fact that we're talking about the grieving of the death of the grandmother by having this playful depiction of the saints. In fact, in one scene, we have Saint Francis barreling through the door with all these cats and dogs and donkeys and sheep, and Saint Martha's behind with a broom trying to sweep everything up. And, of course, St. Jude, who's the patron saint of miracles and hopeless causes, helps her out with a vacuum cleaner. So these are obviously meant to be fun, playful, lighthearted depictions of the saints here.
We're talking with author Anthony DiStefano. His latest book for children, Christmas in Heaven, which is available now, right, Anthony?
It just came out. Today is the pub date, and you're having me on the day of the pub
Woo-hoo!
Date. Always come on your show. First.
Well, it's exclusive here then, because this is your first interview that you've done on this, and this
That's
is the release date of the book, Christmas
yes.
in Heaven by Anthony DiStefano. What's the best way to get the book? Is it through Sophia or your website?
Sophia loves it. When you get it through them, you can get it through EWTN. I always like to plug all the Catholic stores out there and Christian stores, patronize them, and wherever books are sold, Amazon. You know, my books have a large distribution system.
Right. Well, I think it's what I love is there's such an emphasis on the saints, because I love the saints. I wrote a whole book on the saints for female saints, my favorites for women. But I love this. There's so many saints, though. We have over 10,000 saints in the Catholic Church. How did you decide? And we can continue this conversation after the break, because we're probably going to get cut off in about a minute. But just kind of give us a tease of how you decided which saints, because there's so many great saints that you could have included.
You know, the story dictates everything. You know, I wanted to get famous saints in there. But also, you know, they've got to be doing something to contribute to the story. So I didn't want the saints just doing random things. I wanted them doing things that they're known for, things that they're patron saints for. So we have St. Francis surrounded by the animals, and St. Nick putting presents under the tree, and St. Anthony finding a present that was lost, and St. Joseph building a manger because he was a carpenter. And it's also the reason why, you know, I couldn't have certain saints in there, like Padre Pio, for example, who's known for having a stigmata and bilocating, right. and, you know, knowing people's sins before they confess them. And that's obviously, those are qualities less easily put into a children's book.
Yeah, and you have to do a lot of, I think, more catechesis explaining it. It'll be a little bit heavy. You did mention, and we can also address this because we're probably going to hear the music pretty soon, about the note about purgatory at the beginning of the book. So I'd like to talk to you about that when we come back, in addition to some other questions. Talking with Anthony DiStefano, his latest book is Christmas in Heaven. And as we both mentioned, we know it's early. Christmas is quite a ways away. But if you can grab a book like this and have it available, what a great gift to give and put under the Christmas tree for the young ones in your life. And the illustrations are, as usual, absolutely gorgeous. The latest book, Christmas in Heaven, from our friend Anthony DiStefano. More with Anthony right after the break. Stay tuned.
Now, the EWTN Family Prayer with Father Joseph.
Family, a prayer that we pray together is a powerful prayer. So please pray together with me, our EWTN Family Prayer. Today we pray for those who have diabetes. Almighty God, we worship you, our Father. And we pray this day for those who suffer with diabetes. Look upon your children with this illness and grant them relief. Give them patience and the grace of perseverance in taking care of their health. Show them the way to physical and spiritual well-being. Let their cry come to your ears and bring them healing in mind and body and soul. We ask this in the holy name of Jesus, your Son. Amen.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
Two of the hardest words to say in the English language. I'm sorry. I'll ask couples, when was the last time you said I'm sorry?
I think it was our wedding rehearsal dinner. I spilled some coffee on her lap. I said, hey, sorry about that.
Why is I'm sorry so hard to say? What does it mean to you? Are you saying you're a failure? Are you saying I'm wrong? Are you saying, if I say I'm sorry, I'm admitting it's all my fault? I'm sorry are two of the softest words in a relationship in the English language. I'm sorry, very hard to say, very easy on relationships.
Always enjoy catching up with author Anthony DiStefano. It's hard to catch up with you, though, Anthony. Every time I turn around, you've got a new book. The latest one is Christmas in Heaven. It's beautiful. Just released today, as a matter of fact. We are right on the cusp, right here on the news, giving it to you first. Christmas in Heaven, published by our friends at Sophia. And I love this book, but let's talk about the mention of purgatory in the beginning. Why was that necessary for you to put that in there? What were you trying to accomplish?
Well, yes, this is a book about heaven, but I didn't want to give the impression that I don't believe in purgatory. You know, purgatory is a doctrine of the church. It's
right.
Been a doctrine of the church since the very beginning. It's based on the fact that, as Revelation 21 says, nothing unclean can enter heaven. And the fact is that there are people who have died who have been saved by Christ, but who still have on their souls some stain of sin that has to be purged away, forgiven, and some of these souls might have an attachment to the sin that has been forgiven. Purgatory is a place where we go, where we're cleansed of those imperfections so that we could see God face to face without any shame or guilt or attachment to what is unholy. So, I mean, I didn't, this is a book about heaven, and I understand that especially when young children experience loss and are grieving, pastorally, we want to concentrate on heaven and to give them that hope that their loved ones are in heaven. But I didn't want people to think, you know, sometimes, you know, as Catholics, we go to funerals sometimes, and the speakers tend to eulogize and canonize the deceased person. And while that's understandable, mm-hmm. and I'm sympathetic to those people, you know, we never want to deprive the people who have died side of the benefit of our prayers, because they may be in purgatory and need those prayers. So while I don't dwell on purgatory in this book, I did feel I had to mention it, and I put a note at the beginning to help parents explain purgatory to children, just by explaining that this is a place where you clean up. If you were going to meet the president or the pope today, or you were going to be attending a wedding or a big party, you would presumably wash your face and comb your hair and maybe change out of your gym clothes. Well, heaven is the biggest party of them all. We're going to be meeting the most important person of all, the Lord. And so purgatory is a place where we get cleaned up before that banquet.
How many times, I know we've discussed this before, but do you hear from parents or grandparents or aunts and uncles saying that when they read your books, it's like a mini catechism lesson for them, as well as they're hoping to teach the child the faith with using your books as a resource? But I know that other parents have said, for example, when they would go to school with their kids and listen to a talk that maybe a sister gave or something, that they've learned things that they didn't even know. And they're trying to pass on the faith, but then they learn by that process of helping their children learn.
Yeah, this is a very, very important thing to me. It's one of the reasons why I write children's books. I mean, it's fun to write children's books, and there's no greater feeling in the world, Teresa, than when some little kid comes up to you and tells you that they've read your book 150 times or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's a joyful feeling, but I'm always aware that most times these children are having the books read to them by their parents, their grandparents, their aunts and uncles, their older siblings. And sometimes these adults are reading the books to the children 5 times, 10 times, 20 times, I hope in my case. And so you have this tremendous captive audience here that you have a chance to evangelize to, people who need to have the faith, they need to have certain teachings given them so they could be reminded of them and maybe inspired again about certain truths that they've forgotten. So yes, I very much love when I hear that an adult has liked my book. And in fact, I try to write these books like, I'm not comparing my books to Jesus' parables, but I use that as a model. Jesus' parables could be understood by the most uneducated people, and yet they're so deep in meaning that the greatest philosophers and theologians of the church are still trying to, you know, explain them. So I like when my books have different levels of understanding.
I think it's great, too, in this case, for example, in this book, that you bring in so many of the saints, because I guarantee there's adults who haven't thought about the saints for a while and are reading this book, or will be reading this book, God willing, to their kids and grandkids, and are learning about a particular saint that, oh, I didn't know that, or, oh, that's interesting. It may not even have heard of their particular name, but this is really opening up, hopefully, a new world for them. Well, they'll further explore the saints, because I love the saints, and I don't think we take them off the shelf enough in our Catholic faith or appreciate them enough.
I couldn't agree more. That's why at the end of this book, also, we include a little glossary. There's a glossary with a little paragraph about each saint in order of appearance and angel, with a little thumbnail illustration so that the child or the parent can refer back to the book. And the little description just tries to give the essence of who the saint is and what they did, and explain why they're pictured in the book doing what they're doing. You know, so for instance, Saint Francis, the patron saint of animals. That's why he's pictured in the book with animals. When we teach children about the saints, we're giving them a glimpse, not only of the saints, we're giving them a glimpse of this beautiful doctrine we have in the church of the communion of saints, which says that there's a lot more to life than just what we see around us, that there's this invisible spiritual world that's just as important, and that the saints in heaven are real and they're alive, they're different from each other, they can help us, and hopefully one day we will be among them. So, you know, Christmas is a magical holiday, but it's also a very sad time of year for many people who have lost loved ones. So I want to impress upon children from a very early age that even if people have died, Christmas should be a joyful time because those loved ones hopefully are in heaven, and we will get to see them someday.
I think also, and this just popped into my head, but let's say someone has died this year or recently in your family, and this is going to be the first Christmas, you know, that's always the worst, right? That's always the hardest. I remember I was very close, close to both my parents, but especially my father. And being Italian, you know, Italian-Americans, Christmas is such a huge thing. And so when you have that loss, I mean, this is a great tool that could help, right, if someone has recently
lost. I hope so, because we present a very fun pic. The grandfather's explaining to his grandson about how heaven is Jesus' birthday, so they're having a birthday party in heaven for Jesus. And all children understand the concept of birthdays and birthday parties. So there's a distinction between celebrating the birth of Jesus and it being Jesus' birthday. That's a distinction that children will understand. And so if they understand that that there's joy and fun up in heaven, then that's a great thing. And at the end of this book, we see, of course, the grandfather. We actually see the grandmother young again in heaven, and we see Jesus coming up to her. And it says here, the Lord looks at grandma, his face is aglow. He speaks the same words that he spoke long ago. Maiden, I tell you, it's time to arise. And look, grandma hears him and opens her eyes. So you actually see her rising, and then enjoying the heavenly banquet in heaven. So I hope that this is something that will help in the grieving of the loss of loved ones.
Well, it's a beautifully written, as always, but I can't say enough about the cover. It just gives you that beautiful feel of Christmas and St. Nicholas and St. Therese and, of course, St. Lucy, the Saint of Light. I mean, that's just really, it's just beautiful. And the Christmas tree and the little manger and the angels, it just kind of gives you that whole family Christmas feel. Anthony, thank you for this. Appreciate it. And you have another one coming out on Christmas next year, or another children's book?
I have a book on the Eucharist, the Children's Eucharist book, coming out next year before First Communion. It's called From Bread and Wine to Saints Divine. I have a book on the true meaning of Halloween next year coming out, called All Hallows Eve. And I finally have a book for adults next year coming out, also called The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. So I have a lot of things coming out in the next 12 months. I hope
and in your spare time,
again.
You're making cannoli, right?
Yes, exactly.
Listen, thank you. Beautiful book, Christmas in Heaven, from our friend Anthony DiStefano. And Sophia published this book. We'll put the link to it on the archive for Catholic Connection. We'll be right back. Taking a look at the movie Reagan, the faith aspect, but also, how's it doing in the theaters? It just came out the end of August. We'll get the update from Sean McNamara, the director. Stay tuned.
What makes an act moral or immoral? The Catechism of the Catholic Church lays out specific criteria for us to follow. When he acts deliberately, man is, so to speak, the father of his acts. Acts freely chosen can be morally evaluated as either good or evil. The sources on which the morality of an act are determined are three. 1, the object chosen. 2, the intent of the act. 3, the circumstances surrounding the act. To be moral, the object of the act itself must be good and the intention pure. The circumstances are secondary to the first two criteria. They can increase or diminish the morality of the act. For instance, stealing a candy bar is wrong, but far less evil than robbing a bank. Intent and circumstance, however, cannot change the moral quality of the act itself. The end does not justify the means. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Did you know that the Church calls your family to be holy? It's true. Now, don't freak out. The Church isn't holy because the people in it are anywhere near perfect. It's holy only because Jesus is holy, and because the Holy Spirit lives and works in it. And the same thing is true about your domestic church. Our families don't need to be perfect. We only need to open ourselves to God's grace so that we can share His love, healing, and forgiveness with each other and with the people we meet every day out in the world. Remember, holiness isn't restricted to grand gestures. It's as simple as doing ordinary, everyday things in a way that shows God's love. For more tips on living a holier life as a family, check out our books, Parenting Your Kids with Grace and Parenting Your Teens with Grace, or visit CatholicHOM.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
I will be frank with you that as a citizen, I would not like to see any political party outlawed on the basis of its ideology, because I still believe, Mr. Chairman, that democracy can handle it.
I was a brand new KGB officer, given my first intelligence assignment. A certain actor and union leader.
Dutch, there's a purpose for your life.
You can run from a bully for so long, but
But after a while, you're going to have to stand up to him.
He's my boy!
Trailer from the film Reagan recently released. There was also a really cool piece written about our guest, Sean McNamara, in our Sunday Visitor recently. We'll give you a link to that as well. Sean, congrats. So it came out at the end of August. How's it doing in the theaters? Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Teresa. It's doing fairly well. You know, people are going to see it. And what I'm happy about is, you know, people who are writing reviews, regular people are loving it. It's like at 98% verified hot on Rotten Tomatoes. So that's a good sign.
Now, what led you to do this film in terms of why you thought it was important now? I'm just curious as to what goes through your mind as a director, because it's such a complex thing doing a film and doing it well.
Well, this I have a little bit of history with. My first job in the entertainment industry when I was 18 was doing audio for President Reagan's inauguration. So I just had an affinity to the man himself, and he was the first president I voted for, so there was all of that. So it took Mark Joseph forever to get it going, but we finally started shooting in 2020, and then we all got shut down because of COVID. We came back 2 weeks later, shot for 2 weeks, and got shut down again because of COVID. So it was like an on-again, off-again, start-stop. And we came back to California. We shot at the Reagan Ranch, the Reagan Library, and Air Force One. And then we went back to Guthrie, Oklahoma, where we shot most of the film to finish it. And then, you know, there was a war in the Ukraine that stopped our visual effects from being done. And then there was an actor strike last year for me to redo the audio. So we never intended it to come out now. But oddly, there's so many similarities. Like even 3 months ago, there wasn't an assassination attempt or students on campuses protesting or all the debates that are going on. So when I watch it now, a film that was supposed to come out in 2021, it doesn't have half the effect that it does now. It resonates with what's going on with the world today. And I just think the world really needs to see a film like this to remember, you know, I'm not saying it was perfect in the 1980s, but people could get along a little bit better. People have the ability to fight on the Hill like heck all day, but at 6 o'clock, you know, Reagan and Tip O'Neill were a couple of Irishmen having a drink. So that's kind of what I'm trying to get across to the audience is that, look, fight for what you is right, vote for who you believe in, but we got to be friends.
Right. And that is something I think that is lost. I mean, people don't even speak to each other anymore. They're on different sides of the aisle. And I don't know how it got to that point. I mean, I guess I do in the sense of all the rhetoric out there and the explosion of the mass media. But are you hoping, is this one of the reasons why you did the film, Sean, that could bring people together?
I mean, that's the idea. And I'm also, I just wanted to tell the story of a man's life. I mean, Ronald Reagan is very complex. He grew up in a family with a very Christian mother and an alcoholic father, you know, and then he went to Eureka College where Evan Caldoun is the guy who is the basis of economics that became the trickle-down theory. So there's all this sort of history that you learn about the man and how he, you know, he was married and he lost a child to Jane Wyman. Like, there were so many things that happened in his life. So by the time he became president, it is a very complex set of circumstances that got him there. And I just think if people saw that, they went, you know, everyone's human and how they get to a certain place, it's good to know why and how they got there.
And how do you go about, for example, in a process like this, that this is such a huge role for someone, as you said, that Reagan, it's a very complex film, it was a complex person, had all kinds of different experiences. How did you think about the actor who played him, Dennis Quaid? How did that come about?
Well, Dennis I had worked with on Soul Surfer about a decade ago, and he's just a great actor and just such a nice guy and very likable. Everybody likes Dennis Quaid. He's got that smile. And so he kind of mirrored Ronald Reagan. He's an actor, and he, you know, is a likable person. But just choosing that actor, Dennis is so good. His research, for example, we would have like little bits and parts of Reagan's speeches, but Dennis would learn the whole thing, and we'd shoot the whole thing. And I'd say, Dennis, you know, you only really have to learn this paragraph or these two lines. But for him to get into the character, he really got into it. And so it was interesting to watch live while, you know, we had three cameras rolling as he went in and did all of Reagan's speeches sometimes. And it was just really interesting. Now, at the end of the film, we still went back to just bits and pieces of the speech. But an actor like that, and then studied the voice, you know, when when Reagan was young, his voice is up here, you know, and we believe democracy can handle it. But as he aged, his voice mellowed down into the voice that we got to know him as president, where it was down in the register of like, well, that's what you think. And he learned the idiosyncrasies of the actor. And that's just what a consummate actor does. I mean, I think Dennis should be awarded with a lot of awards this year for his performance because he is just genius at it.
Yeah. We're talking with Catholic filmmaker and director Sean McNamara, whose latest project, of course, the film Reagan, which came out at the end of August. And so far, as he told us, is doing pretty well at the box office and getting really good reviews. So how do you, as and I know this came up in the article in our Sunday Visitor, how do you as a Catholic work in Hollywood? Because I know I was in the secular media for a long time, for 20 years, and it took me a while, but I eventually decided that I couldn't do the job that I thought I was supposed to do in the secular media because it was, I'm not even talking about so much even the bias that's there now, but it was all sensationalism, it was all blood and guts, and I didn't feel like I was being used properly with the gifts that God gave me, so I left and eventually moved into Catholic media where I've been for over 20 years now. But there is that constant challenge that you have, and I'm not even saying if you want to do something supposedly Catholic or Christian, right? It's just trying to do a good piece, maybe a good story in my case, or a good program or a film in yours. You can come up against all kinds of situations that make you feel uncomfortable. So what's it like for you now in Hollywood? What's it been like for you?
So, look, there's always a challenge, but people have been doing it forever, and it's challenging. You know, what programs do people want to see, and what we've discovered with something like Reagan is people do want to see a story about a man who is driven by faith and who ultimately became the president of the United States. But it's not the easiest sell in Hollywood. But what I'm finding is there are people out there that would like to see it made. So my angle has been like to raise the money independently. Like even on Soul Surfer, we went out and raised the money. The studio finally released it because when they saw it, it was like, hey, this is a good movie. People will want to see it. We've tested it. But they weren't the first to jump up and say, let's make this from scratch. I think even with Mel Gibson, with The Passion of the Christ, you know, it's not the movie that people are thinking, oh, we should make. But once they're done, people look at it and go, wow, this is great. It's great film making, and it survives the test of time. So I think it's just people like you or like me who just go, there are some great Christian stories, Catholic stories, and we have to do some heavy lifting at the beginning. But once they're made, people really enjoy them. So I just keep going at it.
So you've done a lot of different films. You mentioned The Soul Surfer, which was great. I saw that. Also, another one I loved, On a Wing and a Prayer. Do you have a favorite movie of yours? Like, do you have your favorites of your work that you've done?
You know, it's interesting. They're all my favorites. They're like my children. Like, how can you pick your favorite child? You know, you can't. It's a very tricky thing because I love each film. How well it does out in the world is another story. But you put just as much love and attention into every single film. And some, you know, catch fire and the audience love it. I mean, I loved On a Wing and a Prayer. I made that with Roma Downey, who, my gosh, favorite producer to work with. She was just so lovely on the set. And, I mean, she made sure we left in the Our Father. There was some people trying to, like, cut that. And it was great. I mean, if there's any time you're going to start reciting the Our Father when your plane is going down, that might be a good time to do it. And but it's just like she's another one that puts out great programming and done it in a very good way. I mean, if you remember, like when I was a kid, because I'm old, like the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston, it was just big and it was spectacular. And we could tell stories like that. And I think, you know, now the technology is, you know, more advanced than it was 50, 60 years ago. So we should continue to tell those bold stories and make them fresh on how we present them with the newer actors and the newer technology. And I think there's a lot of people out there willing to do it. And I think the studios are starting to come around and realizing there is indeed an audience for this.
And again, I really liked On a Wing and a Prayer, and it's a true story. And it was intense about it was that it's all taking place in a very, you know, small place, obviously inside the plane. But there's all these different dynamics going on with the family relationship and you know, Dennis Quaid's actor or role, the man he was playing, who was struggling with his faith. There was a lot going on in that film.
Yeah, it was incredible to shoot. Again, based on a true story. A pilot passes away while they're flying home from a destination. And, you know, what would you do in that situation? And it's sort of a metaphor for your faith being tested. because right. he had to put all of his belief into something bigger than himself and to kind of let go and let God. And that's what that movie is a metaphor. And he's got Heather Graham up there as his wife, and they've got to work right. together. And they literally fly through a storm. And anybody who's married knows there's good times and bad times, and there are storms in life that you have to weather. And it's how well you get through that. And if you, you know, believe in God and you have faith, you know, it's not necessarily always going to turn out the way you want, but there's a plan out there that if you, you know, just have faith, you can get through the storm.
So what advice would you have for any young Catholics listening who are thinking about going into the film industry?
I would say absolutely do it. It's the best business in the world, but you have to have a calling for it. Like if you're an actor and you say, well, I want to go to Hollywood and give it a year, I go, I can save you that year because it's not something that I feel like you want to try or anything. If you know you're an actor, if you know you're a director, you have to start acting at your local school, in your classes, or nowadays you can make films on your iPhone and your edit it on your laptop. So you just have to keep creating stuff. And there's no better time. Now with YouTube, you can get your work out there. So, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people can start to see what your voice is. But I just love it. I love every aspect about making films. And it's like having children because you got to love it. It's hard at times. It's easy at times. But it definitely takes passion of wanting to continue to do it. And when you start to let people know you want to do it, I found that everybody was very supportive of me because once they knew that, like, he's serious, he wants to be a filmmaker, they were saying, hey, I know Joe down the street. He wants to be a producer. Right. You guys should talk. You should get together. And that's the experience that I had. It's something that you have to be passionate about, though, because it's not easy. People think, oh, acting right. is easy. Filmmaking is easy, and it's not. It is really competitive, and it's very challenging, but it's super rewarding.
But you said you have to have a calling for it. And again, I think that's where God comes in with your vocation, because if it is your God-given vocation to be in that medium, it's super important that you are dedicated to it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And it's dedicated, but not in the way that you're like dedicated to be doing homework or right. something that you don't like to do. Once you're doing it, it's fun. And it doesn't feel like work, to be honest with you.
Exactly. Work, I was just going to say that.
Once you're doing it, it's just, it's play, it's fun. Like, I go into a set in the day, and I blink, and it's lunch, and I blink, and it's done. And the same thing happens in editing. I blink, it's lunch, and it's like literally days fly by in seconds because you're working within little moments of your movie or your television series. And so time flies when you're making this stuff. So,
but that's how you know it's your charism, though, when you're in it and it doesn't feel like work, because that's that natural
right.
gift coming out. So you're naturally inclined
exactly.
to do that. That's great advice. Sean, God bless you. Thanks for doing this and for bringing quality films to us and using your talents to really get a positive message out there in a world that so badly needs it. So can you give us a little inside scoop as to what you're working on next? Any ideas?
Right now, I'm working on the John O'Leary story called On Fire. And it's about a boy who burned himself as a young boy, and they thought he was going to die. But his mom said, do you want to live? And he goes, yeah, Mom, I want to live. And she goes, well, you take Jesus' hand, and you fight. And he fought, and now he's one of the preeminent speakers around the world, like
wow.
a Tony Robbins type, John O'Leary. And it's called On Fire, and it's really going to be good coming out next year.
Next year. Oh, we're going to have you back on. Sean, thank you so much. God bless you for your great work on Reagan and all your other films. What's the best way to find out about you and your work? Where do we find you online?
You can go to SeanMcNamara.com or McNamara6262 on Insta, and then just Sean McNamara on Facebook.
Great. Thanks for the great work, and God bless your ministry, because it truly is one, and all the difference you're making in Hollywood and in the culture. We'll be right back on a Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection Coast to Coast and around the globe on EWTN. Stay tuned.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
This is Father Gregory Pine of Pints with Aquinas and God's Planning. The second annual Dominican Rosary Pilgrimage, sponsored by the Dominican Friars Foundation, is set for Saturday, September 28th at the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. This day-long event features conferences, confessions, recitation of the Rosary, Holy Mass, and a Hillbilly Thomas concert. Join us for a day of prayer to Our Lady. Learn more by visiting rosarypilgrimage.org. That's rosarypilgrimage.org.
This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart friendly, ride your bike everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at avemaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Catholic Connection. It's a co-production of EWTN and Ave Maria Radio. We will put the links to Anthony DiStefano's new book, Christmas in Heaven, as well as a link to the movie Reagan on our archive section. And to find that, you can just go to AveMariaRadio.net and look for the Catholic Connection link, and it'll all be there. Have a great Tuesday. God willing, talk to you tomorrow on a Wednesday. A domani.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.